The world can present itself as a vast, forbidding place to all but the idealists and adventurers who are driven by insatiable wanderlust and a hunger for adventure. Amanda Lindhout knew she would be a world traveler from the moment she could pack her suitcase. She spent years traveling throughout Asia, the Middle East, and Africa before she ended up in Somalia as a 27-year-old freelance journalist. Lindhout's experience of youthful invulnerability ended abruptly, though, when she was abducted along with fellow journalist Nigel Brennan while they were investigating a refugee story. They remained in the custody of their kidnappers for 460 days. She was starved, isolated, and sexually abused, but she survived and was eventually released when her family was able to come up with enough money to pay a ransom. She chronicled her heartbreaking loss of innocence in a new book, A House in the Sky. It is a painful story, Amanda Lindhout tells. But surprisingly, in the end, it is an experience she does not entirely regret.
The day that I was abducted on the outskirts of Mogadishu on this dusty road, and our vehicle was stopped by this group of teenage boys with their faces wrapped in checkered scarves holding AK-47s, it was hard to comprehend what was happening. I wanted to believe it was going to be over soon, that it was a robbery, or maybe they'd let me go when they realized that I was in the country because, as a freelance journalist, I cared about what was happening there. But when I learned that what they were after was a ransom, and I knew that my government, the Canadian government, doesn't pay ransoms, and coming from a family of absolutely no financial wealth, I knew that it was not going to be over quickly. And in fact, my captors made it known to me that they would hold me for as long as it took. And I knew that it was not going to be over quickly.
And I suspect what maybe comes back most vividly is not the words that were said or what it even looked like, but that feeling in your gut when you knew that there was no clear end to this.
Yeah, it's, you know, people ask me, you know, what's it like to be kidnapped? And it is that sense of not knowing when it was going to end. And, you know, at times, at the darkest times, if it was going to end, if I was actually going to survive. I went through so many different stages in those 460 days that I was a hostage. There was initially, you know, a sense of disbelief, and then acceptance that this was my new reality. And as time went on, and my captors grew, you know, increasingly frustrated that this was taking so long, and the treatment grew worse and worse and worse, you know, I really, really fell into the depths of despair. And it was after a certain point, when I was just so far into that darkness of my own mind, that I discovered something really surprising, which was, also the strength that we have within us, the capacity that I found within myself to survive and to want to survive that.
Take me through a day for you alone, or for you and your partner, who is also kidnapped with you. How do you pass the time? How did you pass the time?
Well, for those first 3 months that an Australian photographer, Nigel Brennan, and I were kidnapped, we were held together. And so, you know, by the end of those 3 months, we were like an old married couple who would, you know, bicker with each other. And, you know, but we needed each other, and we would, you know, play games. And, you know, we had been given some acetaminophen tablets, these giant tablets like that looked like horse pills. And we were able to carve those tablets into a little pair of dice. And we would play backgammon. We had to learn how to be creative with what we had, which was essentially nothing. And when we were together, spent a lot of the time discussing strategies. And then later, after about the 5 month mark, even after we had been separated and we continued to secretly communicate, you know, executing an escape together, we really, really relied on each other.
What's it like to plan an escape, and then what's it like to be recaptured?
Planning this escape was a really desperate measure. Nigel and I used a pair of nail clippers that our kidnappers had given us to carve out crumbling mortar between some bricks that were cemented across the window in that bathroom. You know, we got away with it, and we jumped out a hole about the size of a basketball. And we ran to a nearby mosque where we hoped we were going to find some help. And we had timed it just after our middle of the day prayer, so we knew there'd be people in the mosque. But our kidnappers were in hot pursuit behind us because, of course, we had made some noise when we had jumped out that window. And they chased us into the mosque with their guns. And it was terrifying, and it was devastating to be dragged out of that mosque, you know, across the floor by my ankles, out towards a truck that was waiting to take us away to everything that happened next. And that was really a defining day in our captivity. There was the experience of our captivity before the escape, which was obviously terrible. But the experience after that, everything that followed was aftermath. It was punishment for that.
How many days of punishment?
I would call the 10 months that followed that failed escape attempt punishment. Every one of those days, punishment. The conditions really, really deteriorated, John. My prison went from being the size of the room that I was kept in to the size of the mat that I was forced to lay on the floor. I wasn't even allowed to sit up for some months. I was forced to lie just on my side in chains on the floor in the dark for 24 hours a day. And it was really a struggle to get through not a day, but a minute. And so I really had to utilize the power of my own mind, you know, the ability to escape into imagination and memory of the life that I had had and the life that I wanted to go on to live. And the longer that this experience went on, the other thing that really helped was a growing understanding of who my captors were, who these teenage boys who had taken away my freedom were, which was a product of their environment. These young adults who were completely shaped by the war and the violence of Somalia, a country that's been broken apart by two decades of war. And the clearer I got about who they were, that also helped me understand, because it humanized them to me, and it helped me look for, you know, and search for and be grateful for even any moments, no matter how small they were, of humanity that I saw in them.
What do you think the permanent impact of all this is 20 years down the line?
I think it's hard to look that far into the future, but what I can tell you the impact that it's had 4 years after my release, which is that, you know, that trauma is something that I live with every single day. It's something that I feel like lives in the cells of my body. And that experience changed me, and it changed me in some ways for the better. I'm a person now that is much more, you know, grateful for the little things in life. And I think, you know, I really try to live each day to the fullest. But, you know, I also live with a sense of grief for, you know, what I lost, maybe the part of myself that I lost while I was in captivity.
Well, Amanda Lindhout, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks, John.
Amanda Lindhout is the author of the new book, A House in the Sky, which chronicles her 460 days in captivity in Somalia. She's also the founder of the Global Enrichment Foundation, a nonprofit that works with women in Somalia and Kenya. Listen back to anything on the program, including that conversation. You can check us out at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks to all our new listeners in the state of Georgia. From right here in the studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta, I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.